Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
It's all Christmas for you. So sorry.
Can we delete that?
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself
all
the game too seriously.
No,
I have no idea whether what we're currently giggling about you all have heard or not. if you haven't just heard it, it's because it's...
It's got to go.
It's because one of us or several of us decided that it has to go from the start of the podcast, but I was recording.
Oh, that's all I can say.
Hot mics.
put a marker down there for the first 45 seconds of this recording.
Maybe that will be on a special Patreon podcast if it doesn't make this podcast.
The Debauchery in the Desert podcast.
Yes. This is Egg Chasers, an unusual start to the podcast, but it's an unusual evening. I was going to say that, but it's not unusual, is it? For on a Sunday afternoon, me and Phil to be messaging each other going, no idea where JB is, I haven't heard from him, he's uncontactable.
It's gone dark for the last 48 hours. We know he was in another country.
I nearly got my passport, my phone, and just put it in the envelope and posted it back to him. That's it, you'll never see me again though. Why has he put in this? Gone, bye.
What happened to your phone in Dubai?
Don't know, I'm going to find it. Because everything, I lost my wallet in the sevens, right?
Again, I will just say that we've been here so many times, me and Phil are not like, oh yeah, that checks out, that makes sense.
I mean, I'm on day five, right? I mean, nothing but Speedos. And Speedos, trainers, maybe a t-shirt. I'm tucking my wallet into just into front of my Speedos, right? Anyway, goes missing, shows up within 10 minutes in Lost and Found with all the cash in it. That's the kind of place Dubai is. It's incredibly safe.
That is very good.
Really cool. So I'm expecting to see this phone again, unlike the scamps that have been counted in Madrid.
Oh, yeah. Madrid, you got no chance.
So, yes, we'll get some snippets of JB's rugby week in Dubai, playing against rugby royalty, having beers with World Cup winners and the like. And, maybe there'll be some extra little nuggets, potentially including what may or may not have been at the start of this episode, as discussed.
Exactly.
On a special Patreon podcast. If you want more content and to support the podcast, patreon.com/eggchasers, wherever you get your podcasts, hit subscribe. And, this is the only podcast there for you 52 weeks of the year, every single Monday into our 10th season, whether or not we're half cut from 5 days on the beers or not, as JB is. You're actually doing all right, mate.
Yeah, I am. I'm pretty good. Give me multiple days on the beers, I'm okay. One night is more difficult than multiple days, I find out.
There is something about waking up and just almost getting a trip back on it.
Yeah,
take the edge off.
Knowing that there's more beers in your immediate future.
Exactly.
So you two are better at that than me. And when we, was it New York? And I remember... I did a little call home on like day three or four. I did a little call home to just check in, and I remember saying to Kate, "I was like, oh, I can't keep up with these two." And she actually said, "Man up!" Yeah. Oh, I think we headed out for a brunch at that point.
Exactly. Oh, that brunch was fantastic.
It was a good brunch. That was a good brunch. I did find a CrossFit gym in Dubai, which I booked on for the first morning. And do you know Rugby Sevens in Dubai has also got a CrossFit competition?
Has it?
So, yeah. Who knows what might occur next year?
I still think there's a CrossFit pod for us to do.
I don't know about that.
I think we should. But we're going to talk about rugby. So I want to start with Eddie Jones because tomorrow his meeting with the RFU has been moved forward.
Monday morning?
There's a Monday morning meeting at the RFU. So by the time you may be listening to this podcast, you may know the outcome of that. What do you suspect is going to be the outcome of this meeting?
I suspect he will have a few more coaches to burn out. I think he'll save his job and it'll be a vote of confidence.
That's interesting, because that's not what you want.
It's not what I want. But
I actually think we're probably slightly more likely that he goes now.
I just got this
inkling. I think there's going to be a Monday morning meeting at the RFU, potentially closely followed by a Monday morning meeting at Leicester Tigers.
Oof.
Well,
that would be where just my money would be on that.
So here's where I'm at with it. I think you're absolutely right. Steve Borthwick is who the RFU wants. I think Eddie Jones is going to be gone. And I think Steve Borthwick will be England's next full-time permanent coach. I think Warren Gatland is going to be England coach until the World Cup. And Steve Borthwick will also be at the World Cup as well, by which time he will have finished the season with Leicester. He'll have involvement with Warren Gatland. They've worked together before. And that's what I think is going to happen.
Well, I think it's interesting. Like, Leicester are already thinking about the future without Steve Borthwick. Mm. I think they've come to terms with that because he's such a great coach. But there again, you know, if he doesn't do it now, if he doesn't strike while the iron's hot, he might never do it. And you've got to remember that, because he's current Premiership champion.
Mm-hmm.
His stock, I doubt, can be higher unless he wins something else again.
Unless he keeps winning, which he probably won't do with this Leicester team, just because they lost two of their key players last year. And it'll take a little bit of time to get back.
And then Eddie might go to the World Cup. You know, he might make a semi. Everything might be absolutely fine. And somebody else might do incredibly well. And the England job goes to them. Or Warren Gatland wants it full time. Or there's all sorts of permutations. If he misses his window, he might never get it again. And if he does get it again, it means that the window has been firmly shut on Rob Baxter. Because that would be another 4 years. You'd want him being Borthwick, to keep with this team until his World Cup. And that if he does well with the World Cup, you want him for another 4 years. Mm-hmm. Rob Baxter at that point, 6 years down the line, no England job for him. And it should have been his by rights, you would say, for a long time.
He would have been front runner had Eddie Jones gone at any point prior to about 12 months ago.
Yeah, and now Rob Baxter is wrestling with one hell of a rebuild at Exeter Chiefs. Mm. To the point that I don't know that they'll ever be a force again.
I think they will, just because of the nature of the Premiership. Because
what about European force then?
That, not until... I don't think any English club can genuinely be a European force again until the salary cap is changed.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I just think it's too big a gap to bridge. But on both Baxter and Borthwick, they're both probably in their 40s. Borthwick, relatively early 40s. Baxter, late 40s, I would guess. I mean, Brian Ashton, he was 61 when he took over England in 2006-07, ahead of that World Cup.
Was he not already the attack coach for them, though? Was he not in camp as a consultant?
He might have been, but I guess my point is just they've got Gatland is 65 or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is, I think these guys have got time, if they want to have multiple different bites of multiple different cherries.
Yeah, I agree with that. One of the reasons I was, until last week, I was kind of on the, not happy with how things are going, but I don't think we should make a change, was because the field, the options you'll have after a World Cup are so much, you're so limited by making a change now.
Mm.
But that's where this Gatland-Borthwick, because they know each other, they've worked together, and I think actually you could have...
Sorry, who's worked together?
Gatland and Borthwick.
Have they won?
Yeah, where did they...
Lions. Win? Didn't Borthwick go with the Lions?
Okay. Well remembered, yep.
Yeah.
Was it New Zealand? Was it that
Zealand
one?
Or the more recent one? South
was it South Africa just gone?
I can't remember.
I can't even remember.
It wasn't Sean Edwards, was it? It's Andy Farrell. Because it was always a big deal that Gatland picked Andy Farrell over Edwards. They always felt that. I'm trying to think. No, the last one, because the last Lions team, coaching team, I thought was very underwhelming. So that was Tandy, Gatland, Townsend.
Management in 2007, assistant forwards coach, Steve Borthwick.
There you go.
Was it 2017.
So he knows what he's getting himself into.
Yeah, they've worked together, and so that's why I think it could work. If Steve Borthwick's the man they've decided they want, then Gatland would be a good interim, and I'm happy with that. Pete Stevens has emailed contactedchasers@gmail.com. I think he makes asks a good question here. He says, lads, why does no one talk about the next England head coach being Mark McCall?
Well, I thought that. As we were talking, well, first of all, he's from Ulster. So maybe it might
Warren Gatland's not... from Otago.
I don't know why, but an Irishman taking over the English team just seems a little bit more of a stretch than a New Zealander. I don't know why, but you know, just my opinion. And also, Saracens is, that's the club that just carries on giving if you're a coach. He's got everything set up there. He doesn't seem to have nearly as big a job in his hands as, say, Baxter does. No, I just think he's too settled there. And they're doing too well.
And he's arguably a production line for other English coaches.
Yes.
Like Borthwick's been there. Farrell was there. Gustard for positive and negative.
Yeah.
Sanderson. Shaw, who's there now. Who else has been there?
I don't know, but it's safe to say they'll lose a few more to some more Premiership clubs in the near future.
And create some more great coaches, no doubt. Mm. So maybe actually his best place for England is.
I'd be very happy with Mark McCall.
I think everyone would be.
I would also be happy with Mark McCall.
I do
wonder if his best place for England is actually generating coaches at Saracens rather than in the top job.
Yeah. It's a great shout. While you mentioned Gustard as you were just chatting there, and it reminded me of some comments this week some people have pointed out that maybe England's players, whilst there's a large player pool, isn't of a high quality. And Mark Evans, I think, was said England don't have any players that are truly world class. The definition being in the top two in their position in the world.
Mm.
On our YouTube channel, I made a similar point, which is like just getting rid of Eddie, you can make a difference, but it doesn't solve all England's problems. Because actually, I don't think that whilst we have a big pool of players, and if one player gets injured, you can quite easily bring another or 20 others in. Actually, the top end level of the players available is not as high as anything. And one of the points that came back quite a lot from that was, hold on. Part of that is context-based and is look at and the Gustard leaving Quinns and then them winning the title within 6 months was one of the things that got brought up, which actually the environment, the systems, the way you set a team up with exactly the same personnel, you can radically change how a team plays.
Zach Mercer is not one of the best eights in the Premiership when he left. Give him a different environment and give him a chance to shine in a system where he can be, and he's the best number eight in the top 14, or one of. Mm-hmm. You know? So I think there's a lot of good players in England, but they just don't have the platform to shine, because I don't think England gives them the platform to shine. If they were winning every week, we might say, yeah, it is Farrell, or yeah, it is Manu if he was playing at his absolute best. But they're losing, and therefore they look like losers.
Yeah, I agree with that point. And it's the same point with Quinns. You could make for England when they crashed out of the World Cup under Lancaster, and then less than 6 months later, they win in the Six Nations and go 19 games unbeaten. And I think it's not that England lack the top end talent, because if you look at the squad of England players, how many of them have been, ask the question, how many of them have been over the last X number of years at various different points, they would have been considered for that. Top two in the world.
Itoji, Curry, Itoji, Curry,
Billy back in the
Curry.
Day.
Yeah. Genge, I think, would have been.
Chris.
He's not in the squad now.
No, but he would have been.
Some people, for some people, Stewards around there. And that's far off.
The thing is, if you're constantly asking for world class players, are you a world class coach? I think you are.
Yeah, it's. I think there is enough talent in there. But talent is also a curse. It's not the fact that England have too much talent. Don't have enough top-end talent. It's the fact that there is too much talent. So, like, if you're looking for a 13 in England, who was starting 13, Manu goes down, then you've got Slade, Marchand, Ollie Lawrence,
Porter,
Elliot Daly, Will Joseph, Phil Faulkner. Like, there's...
It's hard to be top two in the world if there's five of you.
Yeah, if there's 10 of you. If you look at like Wales or Ireland, there are only, like, if someone goes down in a position, there is only one or two names that you could possibly throw out. So you're almost never spoiled for choice.
Well, it's the,
apart from maybe their back row.
It's the whole Ben Darwin thing, which is if you have an opportunity and you have contractual stability and it's you and your mate who've been playing there for God knows how long. Like, the reason that Iceland became good at football for whatever reason, it's because they had to play together every single week.
Yeah.
It is. It's a real thing, unfortunately.
And the consequence of that depth of the player pool, which, you know, quite a lot of people will say, quite a lot of fans of other countries say, oh, England should be so much better because they have a player pool. Actually, that player pool in itself is the reason why we're going to arrive at a World Cup. And if Alex Dombrandt is the first choice number eight, he hasn't had many caps. And if Alex Mitchell was the first choice scrum half, he hasn't had many caps.
Dombrandt, I think England's most effective Dracula in last 12 games? I think.
Interesting. Yeah, it does feel like you're... is that kind of first world problems issue? Oh no, I've just got too many options. Oh, no, I've got too many nice pairs of shoes.
This is actually, we've all been there. We've all been there. And this is exactly the problem which was the undoing for Stuart Lancaster, wasn't it? You know, how do I get over the fact that I've got too many good players? Well, I ignore all of them and I just go with the same crew over and over again.
Lancaster, what are you talking about? He was the one that...
50-cap guy.
I understand what you're saying, but he's the one that actually... Look at England's 2019 World Cup finalists, and Stuart Lancaster was the one that laid those... He planted those seeds that then flowered 4 years later.
You see what you're trying to say there? Unfortunately, in the world of fund management, we say being early is the same as being wrong. So don't be correct early.
Yeah, I do think both those things are true. I think Lancaster put a lot of the seeds... laid the roots, laid the foundations.
Well, that's partly because of where England were, and also because of what his skill set is. He is incredible at developing.
He's good with the cones.
Players. He was that under 20. He was that under 20s coach that brought through a load of these guys, and he put faith in them. He spotted the talent, put faith in them, and gave them the opportunity that you're talking about.
But he was not right. So
agreed.
He could be. Arguably, Lancaster for England would be most valuable. We spoke about Mark McCall potentially being most valuable in his current role. Lancaster for England would be most valuable doing the role that he was doing, like the under-20s
coach, head coach, yeah.
But that won't pay as much as being a senior coach at Leinster. Is it Racing 92 he's going to next
Racing.
Year? Yeah. That England under-20s definitely will not pay as much as Racing 92.
Oh, speaking of France, Jack Willis is currently playing his debut for Toulouse, isn't he?
Last week.
He got his debut off the bench last week.
Oh, yeah, his first start this week.
First start was last night.
Oh, okay.
And he scored on debut, on first start.
Good lad.
So. Crushing it. Top two player in the world now?
Yeah.
probably, yes. There is something about the further away players. We've mentioned this point before, but... Yeah. The boy Harlequin's lock, Simmons, who was in...
Matt Simmons, yeah. Oh, in, yeah, England cap, Chiefs. Future England captain.
Chief. I'm not sure how I'd go in like the top 14 if I was a flanker for Toulouse. Wouldn't be good. But I imagine one of the weaker games in the European Cup, I'd do all right.
Against in Siberia, maybe?
Italy.
Italy, yeah.
You'd be fine. Yeah, absolutely fine.
London Irish signed him for monstrous money from... the Chiefs, because he had this kind of cachet, because he was this player from Super Rugby. And
exactly. Yeah. Exactly that. So, England there. So,
watch this space.
We've all said what we think. Yeah. We'll probably be, by the time you've listened to this, you'll probably be shaking your head and saying how wrong we all got it.
I think I've got it. Absolutely. I think it is going to be the... Well, I think Borthwick's already... Well, Ronan O'Gara... What sort of kicked off the conversation is Ronan O'Gara came out and said this week, yeah, I've had a conversation with him, and I've ruled myself out.
Yeah.
But I had to have the chat.
That means he's not had the chat.
Well, do you know what? I know he's negotiating his contract with La Rochelle, and it's a good bit of information to be out there when you're trying to get a contract. It's also, potentially, I did look at that and go, is that a constructive dismissal case for Eddie Jones right there? Like, oh, yeah. They've had conversations with people about my job when I'm still in my job.
But they might say after the World Cup.
Yeah, you just frame it for in 12. We've got to get it right for in 12 months' time.
You know, as far as I'm concerned with Ronan O'Gara, why would you ever leave La Rochelle.
La Rochelle is pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, when I think about a team like Lyon, who have got a lot of money, and when they were coming through the French ranks, anyone that got them to the next level would be treated like an absolute god. Mm. You know, what's the old Guinness saying about Johnny Wilkinson? Loved by the English, adored by the French. Right, if you get into one of these clubs and you take them places, like, well, he's doing at La Rochelle, they'll build a statue of him.
Mm.
Like, they'll give him land. They'll, you know, all sorts of things. He'll be treated like a Saracen.
But he's right, though.
I bet he never has to buy a coffee when anyone strolls down the boulevard in La Rochelle.
100%. But as you know, as anyone else, you never get a pay rise for just doing your job well, unless you're... Well, no, actually, you get a pay rise in the public service, even if you're not doing your job well.
Yeah, well, we
you just get incremental pay. But no, you never get. I've never ever got a pay rise for. I've never ever got more money for just doing my job well. I've only ever got more money when someone else wanted me.
True.
So it's
there's a small cavalcade of coaches now who are in very, very much. Sorry, very much demand, and Ronan O'Gara is probably like top of those because it's not England; it's someone top 14.
Ronan O'Gara. So. Probably the most highly ranked youngish coaches would be Borthwick, O'Gara, Scotty Robertson.
Robertson, yeah.
But two of those have done it kind of around the world. One of them has only done it in one place.
But none of them qualify under the RFU's definition. Must have international experience.
Englishman. Well, the previous one was ideally Englishman, but international experience.
Yeah.
So Borthwick does.
Japan. Lions.
England.
So yeah, I always
not
think,
as head coach though.
Yeah, I always think that means head coach.
Yeah, I don't think it would.
I couldn't see what the difference would be.
I think Lions, Japan, England, and now in a head coach position, winning the Premiership. I think.
Turning it in 2 years from the team that should have got relegated to winning the Premiership. That is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and doing it whilst being, which is going to be necessary as England coach, being ruthless in terms of who fits what you're trying to do.
And also, he got a draw this week against the highest paid coach in the world.
Yeah.
So that was pretty impressive.
Yeah. I wonder if Pat Lam still is the highest paid coach in the world.
Well, his salary won't have gone down on his 8-year deal. But,
8 years.
But someone else, the bottom of the league.
Someone else might.
Let's jump onto that. You can contact deadchasers@gmail.com. If the England situation hasn't been, no news has come out, feel free to chip in, or else feel free to just abuse us for being woefully wrong.
Totally wrong.
In our assessment, if the news has come out. But onto Bristol. Let's go to that. They're bottom of the table. And that was one thing which. Being at the game and just chatting to Bristol players, chatting to Pat Lam and stuff, that's the one bit where obviously they'll be hurting that they're bottom of the table and that they've been on a bad run of form.
Mm.
But it didn't matter enough that they were bottom. The lack of relegation it's tangible, it's real. When I you know asked about the six runs defeat and confidence and stuff, he's like, oh well, you know, we'll keep going and we're positive and.
Just system.
But I want a team, whoever they are, but especially when it's a team like Bristol or last season Bath or years before Leicester, when you're at the bottom of the table, I want you to be...
Terrified.
Absolutely terrified.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
Yeah, I do agree with it as well.
And it's a shame that getting rid of relegation doesn't actually help it.
Mm.
Well, also, that's the other thing. As someone I was chatting to... I was actually chatting to Dougie from the More Over podcast. He was working on camera 3 at the Bristol game, and we were having a chat. And he said, "Nothing's been sorted out about what's happening with the Premiership next season, has it? We are at the halfway point in the season, and we still haven't got a clue who's going up, how many teams next year, what's happening."
Nope.
Play it by ear.
Well, it kind of is going to be what on earth happens with the consortium and getting Wasps consortium for Worcester and getting Wasps out of administration or. Whatever happens there.
We're jumping around on topics here, but on the Worcester thing, the preferred bid has been given more time, which seems ominous to me.
So, why is telling you what this
bid? No, I'm with you. The whole thing has seemed ominous.
James Sanford doesn't seem to have bona fide credentials that you need to buy a club, in my opinion. So, in my mind, you need to have a net worth of about 100 million quid in your name in order to run a rugby club. to afford it.
To afford the losses that you're going to take, that's not, pretty much.
That's not my opinion. That is the opinion of someone who knows about owning rugby clubs. Mm-hmm. And I know that's what they, that's what you think. If you're going to do this, it is a very wealthy man's game. Now, it is Stamford and O'Toole, but they are saying they've got... Yes, sorry.
Yeah,
so, they say they've got backing from Americans, is that right? Is it American money or something?
There is certainly some American money that's been named.
Yeah,
as being
there. Look, if there's some American money, I just hope the guy loves his rugby because it's going to cost him an awful lot. And I hope he's very, very wealthy. Mm-hmm. Because if not, they're screwed. They're absolutely screwed. It's going to get worse.
Yeah.
I'm going to bet it'll get worse. The best thing you can hope for is some local businessman. He was worth broadly around that.
Or Steve Diamond's sustainable long-term plan.
He was worth broadly around that.
Diamond's wishes.
I can't remember what he called it, because you know Alex Anderson had his Malbec Sundays, and then I can't remember what Dimes referred to. He had a thing, something to do with Worcestershire. I can't remember what it was.
I was chatting to someone at the airport today about Alex Anderson. He told me an amazing line about something he said in the interview about Sam James. Did you hear the interview with Sam James?
Don't think so.
He's just come out and said, I love Sam James. So he's listing all the things that he likes about Sam James. And he goes, do you know what? No, actually, I just love him. I just love him. Love Sam James.
Who doesn't?
Who doesn't? I love Sam James.
Did he pass an important milestone? Was it like a 100th appearance or something
maybe.
Like that?
200, yeah, maybe 100.
Probably more than 100.
Yeah. Definitely more than 100.
You loved him that much. Why didn't he play at 13 instead of Robert Dupreer? That's my own though. Questions must be answered.
I'll ask him on. I'll ask him next Sunday, and I'll ask him on Tuesday night. It's pretty cool, actually. So the I don't know whether it's just Sale do this. I assume all the clubs do this, but Louis, my son, is in the Sale DPP program, and they've invited all the parents to the stadium on Tuesday night, and Alex Sanderson's hosting an event.
That's cool.
To try and, like, you know, here as a parent, here's what you can do to help your lad. Here's what we're trying to achieve. And
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
And stop talking about good people and whatnot. Walk out. Walk out.
That's something. So one thing I noticed on the address when this email came out saying, come along, it said it was called the Salford City Salford Community Stadium, not the AJ Bell Stadium anymore. So I think AJ Bell is no longer the name sponsor of the stadium, but I think the branding is staying up. AJ Bell branding is all staying up because it's too expensive to take it down. That's happened before, so that might be why what's going on there. But
I'm sure that AJ Bell deal is a long-term deal, but here's something for you. I think his name's Andy Bell who started AJ Bell. Which makes sense if it's AJ Bell. But yeah, obviously a very wealthy individual now. But they flew him down to Six Ways when they were trying to save Worcester, and they badged up all of Worcester as the AJ Bell Six Ways. And it didn't quite get his attention enough. If he wants to buy a rugby club, he's got a director of rugby who's easily on hand. Just saying.
Local to the area?
Local to the area now.
Interesting.
So, yeah, we're halfway through the season. We don't know what's happening.
Don't know what's happening next year.
Next year. And we're halfway through the season, and Bristol are bottom of the table.
Did you see Northampton's financial results?
Yes, small loss save for an insurance event. Small profit save for an insurance event.
Which was quite impressive to me.
Quite remarkable, because it included some of the... It was the financial year 22, so it included some of the lockdown in 21, I think. Yeah. Or the very back end of lockdown in 21.
Yeah, so... I think they made £300,000 profit, but that's because of a £500,000 insurance coverage, whatever it is, been paid out. I think that's amazing. I think everyone at Saints should be rightly proud of what they've done there, because that is hard.
Yeah.
And if they can carry on...
It's hard in any circumstances, never mind in some of the pandemic window where they had less... fewer people visiting.
I've got to say, it's hard to dislike Saints. It's hard to dislike how they play the game. You know, the infrastructure around them, the transparency around their financials is amazing, because they tell you absolutely everything. This is what happened. This is how it happened.
Yeah. Although I was just going to mention, so we just mentioned Bristol being bottom of the league.
They had a loss of £3 million, did they?
Well, they are not on financial results, okay. But in terms of points for and points against. So they have the worst points difference by some margin, actually.
Yeah, they do.
32 worse than Newcastle. They're minus 82.
I've got more than that. I've got the points minus 82, yeah? Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yes.
So minus 82 points difference, but they are the second. They've scored actually the third fewest points for behind Newcastle and Bath, and their second worst points conceded, only behind Northampton.
You know,
so for all the good that Northampton do, their defence, and that's something that showed this week, their defence is at times not good enough.
Well, as Chris Boyd says, it's what you leave out that counts. How do you make the boat go faster? And in, as far as he was concerned, it's all about working on the things that you're good at. He said, in fact, I'm sure he's saying you'll always be bad at something, but what will it be? And I guess that's what they've decided. Only got so many hours
well,
in a day.
Well, they're bad at defence and their tight five is bad. But they're amazing at lots of other things.
But how is the tight five bad? You got the England captain.
Dave Ribbons.
The replacement for the England captain.
Coles.
Yeah.
Well, Coles isn't in the tight five.
No.
Coles was playing six, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
But the point still stands.
They should be good, but they're not.
They're not. Mm. They're not. Their scrum got bullied at times by that Gloucester scrum. Balmain and Rapava Ruskin.
Balmain is one of the most underrated tight heads in the entire competition.
That is my best pick in fantasy rugby draft, was getting in, I think, in the fourth or fifth round, getting Gloucester's front row.
It's turned out to be a very good pick. It looked like a horrible injury for Jack Singleton.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, actually, yeah.
What happened?
Wish him well.
Innocuous, no foul play. They didn't replay it on the screen, but it appeared, and I only watched it at the time, but I saw him go down, and it just appeared his the lower half of his leg wobbled in a... It was like two frames. It wobbled in a way that you
don't want to know.
Yeah, so my guess would be some kind of fracture or dislocation of his lower, I think, right leg.
That is actually an enormous loss. I mean, that's a table-changing loss.
Well, they're lucky they've got Cicino, who's also very good, but they had two outstanding hookers,
and now they've got
one outstanding hooker.
One of the reasons Gloucester works is because those driving walls, we spoke about this before, mm-hmm.
And they did it to great effect in this game.
Yeah. You want to play Gloucester, you've got to expect them to go to the back of the moor, set up a drive. In fact, you've got to work out how to get two scores on the board, just to match their mauls.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can play them properly. And one of the big reasons for that is Singleton can hit the back so consistently.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trying to defend a line out and you've got Singleton on the field, you defend differently to playing against Singleton than you do against Cicino. Everybody knows this.
But hitting the back man, that helps a massive amount. And George McGuigan's arrows are brilliant, and that's a reason why Newcastle are particularly good at it. But those two teams, I love the fact that those two teams have managed to keep that going at a time when it appeared like the driving maul was being shut down as a weapon.
Because they're smart with their coaching. Very smart with their coaching.
Yes, and that was... They were very handy. The driving maul was very good. Their scrum at times was totally dominant this week against Northampton. But also, Gloucester, he's such a quality player. Carreras played at 10.
Yeah.
The way he hits...
Hang on. I'm serious. Do you think he's playing at 10 because we brought this to someone's attention?
No. I think Michael Checker might have brought it to... he plays 10. Oh, all right. Why didn't you tell us you played 10, Santi?
I think Hastings might have a niggle. Yeah. But
what an option.
He the way that he takes the ball to the line, the pace that he put on it, there's two times, one for his try and one partway through the first half, where Finn Smith was the man who was supposed to be marking him and just couldn't get near him. And Finn Smith is a great player, but he was just totally thrown by the flatness of the pass and the way that, as a 10, Carreras explodes onto the ball was absolutely sensational. And he looked amazing in this game.
He did look great.
Did Finn Smith play well?
He did. Some of his passing was very, very good. So the range and options for his passing was excellent. He did those two, the Carreras try, and then there was a break where him and Mitchell both kind of misread Carreras, where he looked a bit shaky defensively, but other than that, he looked okay. considering he was behind a pack that was getting beaten up a bit.
Yeah.
What do you think the attendance was for the Saints Gloucester game?
Saints, 12,500.
Well, no, come on. According to Premiership Rugby, so the real attendance. According to Premiership Rugby's website, the official website.
Are you on Premiership Rugby's website now, not Ultimate Rugby?
Yeah, not Ultimate Rugby, Premiership Rugby.
You've had your fingers burnt.
Yep.
I'm guessing they've got it at zero.
They have got zero, yeah.
Yes.
Nobody went to watch Gloucester, Northampton Saints. And Bristol Bears against Leicester Tigers? How many would you guess it that were there?
Well, I would have guessed, because I was actually there, yeah. I would have guessed there was 14,000.
Zero again, I'm afraid. Okay. So you're wrong on both.
I was wrong. Yeah. I was wrong.
Zero.
Just on the Gloucester game, I do want to say, I really hope Singleton is not out for a long period of time. And I have been wrong on this before. Earlier this season, I said that Akam van der Merwe was going to be out for a long time. And I think he missed one game week. Because there was a croc roll, and it looked like either his ankle or his knee went, and it just must not have. So I really hope that Singleton is okay.
Yeah, watch this space on that one.
Yes.
But no, and they're back to Gloucester needed that.
One last thing on Saints before we go. I don't know if it's announced or not. Did you see a video of England training in the gym and then Finn Smith been there? Not been announced in the squad?
No, but I did see some pictures earlier this year of Charlie Atkinson training with England.
Yeah.
But I've not seen Finn Smith.
No, there you go. That was my only contribution.
Hmm.
Mm.
Finn Smith, the future. Top two player in his position in the world.
Mm. Him and Marcus Smith.
Yep.
Both. The Smith brothers. So Tim, you were we've tried a couple of times unsuccessfully to get onto the Bristol Tigers game because we're meandering through the pod this week.
So just really, let's really get to the sort of crux of this. Who would you prefer being bottom, Bath or Bristol? Because it is hard, isn't it?
Well, London Irish have just moved off with their win over Newcastle.
They're level on points with Newcastle and Bristol.
Yes,
on 17 points.
Yeah.
I mean. Like I say, I want that to really matter. On the one hand, Pat Lamb was at pains to say, you know, this is what a great league. Anyone can beat anyone.
did he know it was going to happen this week? Do you like when he knew he was going to lose against Newcastle?
I thought Bristol, the last 2 weeks, actually, they've narrowly lost to Sale and they've got a draw against Leicester. They look good, you know. Yeah. I thought they looked good.
Problem is, maybe I'm going to have to give Pat Lamb a bit of credit here. Yeah, you can look good in the Premiership quite frequently, but you've got to win. And I think that is the difference. You know, previous years, when they had a bit of an advantage with how much money they could spend because of the situation with the salary cap, you could play well and win. Now, you can play well, lose, because you need to be absolutely on it all the time. So, yeah, he might actually have a point.
That was a full bore Leicester Tigers. The champions, and you know Leicester have they're 4 wins, 4 defeats and a draw now. They've played a lot of games away from home. I think they played 6 out of their 9 games away, but that was a full on Leicester team. I looked at that team sheet and I honestly thought, as many good players as Bristol have got back in, and Semi came back and Ellis Genge was there, I thought Leicester will do him here.
How did Ibatoya go?
Good. He looked really good.
Got man of the match.
Yeah. Hey.
Yeah. His first ever Premiership Man of the Match.
Yeah.
Wow.
As you told...
Well, he was telling me just before.
Was he?
He went, I've had a Premiership Cup before. I've never had one of these. he played very well. Defensively, he's good. He's an attacking threat. He fits Bristol. It's a good fit. It's a really good fit.
Well, I thought him, obviously, Semi and Diego Bailey on the wings all looked dangerous.
Yeah.
They were all beating players. They were carrying hard and well. And I think you're right. Bristol will be disappointed, as Ibatoya said himself, they were disappointed in the result. But it was a very strong Leicester Tigers team, about almost as strong as they can put out. And Bristol, it was a weird game though, because Bristol started well.
Yeah.
Leicester then controlled the whole of the rest of the first half. I thought after the first 10 minutes
dominant.
Or so.
Through their set piece.
Yeah, set piece, kick the corners, control the game, box kicking and kicking the corners. And then the second half, Bristol just came back into it. And then it was the Van Wijk
red card
that was on the penultimate try, wasn't it? And then Leicester had 15 minutes to hold out and couldn't quite do it.
Yeah.
But it was very interesting.
And AJ had the kick for the win.
Yeah, AJ could have won it.
He got the pitching wedge out instead of one of his woods.
Wasn't the cleanest strike, was it?
It wasn't a clean strike. But
does anybody understand the thought in Bristol at the moment behind having two, first-choice tens? And I presume two first-choice tens on nearly first-choice money.
Well, the big problem is you've got about six players who are on first choice, first player money. Everyone else must be paid like pence.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you were going to sign AJ McGinty and then not play him, oh my God. Imagine how many Worcester and Wasps players you could have got for AJ's money.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And when I thought when they signed AJ, my thinking was, oh, okay, right. Pat Lamb's going to have a bit more balance in the way he plays. He's going to kick for a bit of territory and then play when they get into the right areas. And AJ McGinty at Sale was fantastic at game management. And then he kept picking Sheedy. But it appears through the season, early in the season, they were still playing the Bristol way, having to go from most places. But now they are changing. Mm. They are playing a more balanced game. And I think over the next few weeks, AJ will become their starting 10 because they are playing a different type of rugby now.
Well, Sheedy is hands down the better of the two athletes. Better runner, better carrier, so on and so forth. AJ is easily, and it's not even close, the better passer and the better kicker of a ball. So what they want to do with these two, I don't know. Are they trying to transition Callum Sheedy out and play something completely different? I don't really understand.
I don't think it's completely different, but I think they are definitely... I don't know whether it's because it's winter coming, I don't know. But I think they're definitely changing how they play.
Play the conditions, maybe. But you kind of want someone who can do both, although you don't always get that luxury.
Yeah, true. Hold on, go on. Sort your mic out, is that right?
Sorted.
So I thought Bristol were good. I tell you what, you talked about Jack Singleton, and where we hope his injury isn't bad, and we hope he's not... Great to see Dan Kelly back. 6 months out.
Yeah.
Back in. And there's a lot of talk about Manu. Again, as Dougie from Mallover, I'll give him credit. I'm not just going to steal his point and then say it. Well, I was chatting to him on. I was saying I'm so excited to see Dan Kelly because I was expecting to see the England players come back in. Wasn't expecting to see Dan Kelly's name out of the blue because Leicester don't give you any information about. Actually, I don't know. Andre Pollard, I tried to find out and ask questions. Has he had surgery? Is that what I heard? Is he injured? No, I'm not just asking him because he's in my FRD team. I'm just genuinely interested. Couldn't get any answers. So I wasn't expecting Dan Kelly. And great to see him back. And Dougie mentioned, don't forget, he was the player they had when they let Manu go.
Did they have Atkinson travelling with them?
Yeah, he was on the bench.
Was he? Did he get on?
Yeah, for a bit. But Dan Kelly, we're talking about England's midfield. He had one cap. That could be the answer right there.
Why do you like Dan Kelly but not Porter? They're so similar.
They are similar, but Dan Kelly is a 12. Porter is a 13 playing 12, which is what some people would want that to happen with Manu. Dan Kelly is a 12 playing 12.
That's true.
And he just feels a bit more direct, Dan Kelly. Mm. Slightly more maybe explosive or physical. Not quite sure what exactly I put my finger on, but a bit more direct.
Yeah. That said, Matt Scott's been great for them this season as well.
He's a good player, good all-round player, Matt Scott. Yeah.
So Leicester will be really disappointed to have let a 14-point lead slip. And they're not the Leicester of last season, are they?
It's those two players. Whatever you say, missing Genge and George Ford, that is going to impact you. And you see as well in the run-up to them winning it last year, how totally influential those two were in the leadership of that team. They almost ran the forwards and ran the backs, and between them ran the whole team.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's always going to be tough losing those two players. But I think I think they'll be in with a shout this season.
Definitely.
They're in fifth at the moment. They've not had the best start.
They've got all their players back. And like I say, they've played six of their 10 away games.
Away games.
So they've got seven home games in their remaining matches. They're They're looking good. They'll be fine.
I think they'll be all right. I think they will.
Ollie Chesham is massive, by the way.
Yeah, told you he's massive.
He's huge.
Yeah, and his brother's bigger.
Their players are actually just... It's odd because it's... They aren't much bigger than Bristol, but they just... Standing pitch side and looking at Leicester warming up, they just look enormous.
Now.
George Martin's a frightening player as well.
Harry Wells
is scary as well.
Yeah, I think Harry Wells is a normal player. So here's something which I might have said last week, but it's regarding South Africa's physicality and how we think about the physicality. So South Africa actually are not a massive pack. They are a massive pack. That's a lie. They have the potential to be a massive pack when they got their bigger states, but quite often they don't. Quite often they have Quagga Smith. They always have Khaleesi play.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mostart's actually a small bloke. Yeah, like, he's actually a small bloke.
Bongi and Mbonambi.
Yeah.
Well, Mostart is still 6'7".
Yeah, but he's relative. It's all relative.
Bloke, yeah.
He's on the spectrum of second rows. He's in the middle to just lower.
He's on
the
lighter side of of second rows. But then often he's wearing seven on his back. So he's on the bigger side of people who would wear seven on their back.
South Africa play their blind side. I do know. Seven, yes. But yeah, you're right.
So you combine all those, and they're not actually as enormous, but it's just a mindset. Physicality is a mindset, as much as it is pure size.
Leicester do have that.
And I said Harry Wells before. I've been watching Harry Wells for a long time, thinking he's George Martin, because they both have longish hair.
Mullets.
Yeah, mullets. And they both have scrum hats. So it can get confusing. Although this could be like the time when Tom Johnson and...
Who was it?
Haskell?
Cruz?
No, Moritz Botha.
Moritz Botha. Both had pink scrum hats. Like, this guy's having a stormer.
He's everywhere. He just made an attack on the right wing. There's a crossfield kick and he's making an attack on the left wing.
Incredible. So it might have been that. But Harry Wells has really impressed me. Nowhere near an England ball, from what I can tell.
Well, you're right to mention that. And there was one, just while we're on this, actually, before we depart Leicester-Bristol, there's one message... we got contactheadchasers@gmail.com. I thought it was quite a good email. Very well thought out email. And it says, there we go. Oh, man. No, not that one. Sorry. Oh, there we go. Edmund Levine. Egg Chasers, there's an incredible misremembering of the World Cup final in relation to Dan Cole. I would urge you to watch the final in two parts. One where Cole is scrummaging with Mako and one where Marler is on. Count the penalty counts and then decide if Cole was really to blame.
Interesting.
Cole and Marler actually won dominant scrum penalties. He said, I may be biased, but Cole is still England's best tight head.
He might be England's best tight head.
He might actually be, well...
Ted Levin, I beg your pardon.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ted.
He might actually be England's best tight head. Him or Fraser Balmain. Might be the best tight end.
Because we were talking about this as a problem position, and it's interesting because we do think of Cole being the one that got marmalised. But
well, he did, the scrum did when he was on, because he played 76 minutes, but that's an interesting way to frame it. How much was with Mako and how much was with Marler? Because Marler is a very, very good scrummaging loose head prop. Mako...
Is that what we said last week, though?
We said that last week, but we didn't make the point about that. We've been saying Dan Cole's been playing well, but maybe the last 4 years have been, or 3.5 years have been, unkind to Dan Cole.
And it's interesting because I do often watch England games back afterwards. I don't think I ever watched the World Cup final. I'm not sure if it, I could. Not sure enough time has elapsed to allow me to watch the World Cup final. Maybe
I enjoy it.
Maybe if we win it next year, I'll be able to.
But Johnny Wilkinson has never watched the 2003 World Cup final. Mm. He wants to have the memory in his mind. He's never watched the game.
Really? So yep. I had this conversation today with somebody about the England players remembering games, and it's my theory that none of them remember the game at all, and never will do, because they see it and they remember it more from the TV highlights and the stories coverage that have been told. And each other's stories.
It's like, how many times have you seen a photo of photo of when you were a kid, and then you mix that up with your memory? It's like in courts now, isn't eyewitness testimonies one of the least reliable forms of evidence you
what
can have?
What type of suit does Jacob Rees-Mogg wear?
Three-button, double-breasted.
Dark double-breasted.
Oh, well done. Right, the reason I say that is because for the longest time, the caricature of him was in a pinstripe suit.
Yeah.
That's like the Mandela effect.
Yeah, thing. He's never worn a pinstripe suit.
So, yeah, eyewitness testimony is really unreliable and far massively overused in court cases because the human mind is so unreliable.
I actually read something today, I don't know if this is true, that said when you get incredibly consistent eyewitness recalls, it's actually more likely to be wrong. Because it means people have conferred with one another and almost aligned their views. That's actually a negative correlation with the accuracy and
interesting.
That would start
how many people agree with one
that's
another.
That's also why you need people like JB and to a slightly lesser extent me, people who are willing to say things contrary to the crowd. Because quite often it's the human nature to want to conform, isn't it?
Yes.
Be disagreeable.
Yeah, be disagreeable. That's the phrase.
Mm.
So maybe Dan Cole still got lead in the pencil, and maybe he has been farmed, put out to pasture too soon for England. And certainly the point we were making last week and the last few weeks was, I just want, particularly after the South Africa game, what's wrong with just wanting a prop who can scrummage and not get battered? And I don't care how good their tip-on pass is as a pivot player. Although Ellis Genge's offload
was amazing.
That first Bristol try was immense.
Yeah, get your man who can do both. But if they can't do both,
if I have to pick one,
if you've got to pick one, primary function,
easy choice.
Yes,
there's only two other Premiership games to discuss, and I didn't see either of these.
So I've only seen highlights of Irish Newcastle, which was probably quite a good way to watch it because there's some lovely tries, some lovely wide range of passing from Paddy Jackson, who also got on the scoreboard himself, in his, I read somewhere, his 55th consecutive Premiership start.
Is that right?
Which is absolutely...
Compare and contrast that with Bristol's situation at 10.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so exactly. Like, although they're both on 17 points and bottom of the league, so which is wrong.
Fair point. But talking to players who consistently are doing the business in the Premiership, and whether or not you buy into the Eddie's test match animal thing, but OHC... His try last week was against Leicester was class.
Yeah.
And he did some lovely things in this as well.
Lovely things, including a 50-22 kick.
Yeah.
How many more years does Paddy Jackson need to be able to change allegiances?
Well, he'd have to have other allegiances available to him with
because you can't change on
residency.
You can't change on residency. It's only on grandparents. It's like Charles Piatel going back to the country of his birth.
Genuine question. What is the situation for Ulster players? Are the Irish qualified all the time, or can they play for England for obvious reasons?
Well, not England, because they're a separate country within the UK.
So it would need Northern Ireland to start their own team and separate, and I'm not sure we want to go there.
No, but
why?
There is an Ulster man who's looking at switching allegiances.
Is there? Who?
There was a news report this week, I think it was on BBC, that John Cooney...
Oh, yeah.
...is... So he's got a Scottish family and would consider, he would be eligible, because it would be 3 years, I think, ahead of the World Cup.
A long way to go.
It's so good. He can step down from Ireland to a Tier 2 nation. Joking.
Tier 2 nation that beats England half
the
time.
Yeah, exactly, quite.
Problem is, I'm not sure Paddy Jackson plays for England, actually. Shame.
He's in a high competition position. Let's put it that way. But he's playing some lovely rugby.
I feel sorry for John Cooney because I don't like the qualifying on residency thing. When Jameson Gibson Park retires playing rugby, like CJ Stander, who I've got a lot of time for CJ Stander as a bloke, as a rugby player. He gave his all for Ireland when he did wear the shirt. But as soon as he retired, he went back to South Africa. He might never come back. Same goes with Jameson Gibson Park. He'll be back to New Zealand. And I don't begrudge him because I would do the same thing in his shoes. But I just, the counterpoint to that is John Cooney's a man who deserved Ireland caps and missed out on it as a consequence.
Deserved more than he got.
Yeah, 100%.
Definitely, because he's a quality operator.
That said, as I say, I'd do the same if I was Jameson Park. Yeah. Family, coach, financial advisor, I'd to do the same thing.
I was really battered for Falcons.
In the end, the
last 20 minutes.
It
was 2017 at one point.
It's very Irish. I mean, quite often they found a habit of coming back in the last 20 minutes, as they did against Leicester last week, and they've done many times. But this time they just stretched out in the last 20.
And only 6,000 at the Brentford Community Stadium.
It's better than zero?
Yes, it is. But it's better than the combined attendances of Bristol Bears and Gloucester. It's amazing, isn't it? It's the little things that really let Premiership rugby down. Imagine the NFL doing this.
Just on that, in terms of, I wonder what sort of atmosphere you generate on with 6,000, but Gloucester and Northampton, that would be brilliant. I was having a discussion. It was following on from being at Twickenham last week. I was chatting on the catering bus with Nick Mullins and with Martin Bayfield, and we were talking about Twickenham, and I mentioned what I'd said on the podcast last week, that it almost seems like the RFU are ashamed in some way, either ashamed of who comes to watch the rugby.
Yes, of course they are.
Or not catering for the audience that they have.
They want to tell their advertisers that their key demographic, who is constantly growing, is 25-year-old university-educated females who are bisexual and preferably of an ethnic minority. That's what they want to tell their advertisers, because that's cool. The reality is they don't really like the people that show up to Twickenham much, and that's why they treat them with such disdain with almost everything that they say from a public policy point of view.
To broaden that out, I think that there's almost an element of, like, when I went to the Principality Stadium, Cardiff, during the Autumn Internationals, they embrace their Welshness. They get Cyril the Goat out. They have the male Welsh choir. All they need to do is sing a couple of songs, and it creates something. Well, but what I'm saying, like the Englishness. There's so much English heritage. Think of the 2012 Olympic Games opening ceremony, when how great that was to actually embrace what makes us English or British or whatever.
It wasn't my favourite opening ceremony, but nevertheless, it was better than the closing ceremony. That was a disaster.
But rather than a bit of Calvin Harris or Rudimental or something, why not play a little bit of Elgar, a bit of the Beatles? Just make it, English.
Yeah,
be proud. Be don't be ashamed.
The WRU do have their own problems when it comes to their fans, like, you know, calling them
vomiting on small children,
calling them all drunk hooligans. That kid deserves to be ostracised from society for what he's done to drinking culture in Wales. If that really happened, he should have kept quiet. Should have kept his mouth shut.
Great story.
I
remember when I was 11 getting vomited on.
But, you know, amazing.
That's not, if it happened, that's obviously not okay.
Well, it is okay, because it's 80,000 people, Tim. It's 80,000 people. I'm amazed it doesn't happen more often. I would say a ratio of one vomited kid per 80,000 fans is one hell of a ratio.
Well, maybe it happens like 10 times a home game, and you've had all of these...
Maybe it's under-reporting.
Yeah, these kids have been taking it for years and years and years. And you've got this one snitch who ruins it for everyone.
Hashtag believe all vomited on kids.
Exactly right.
So. But anyway, I was just as you were talking about the match day experience, and that was what I came to, was actually, it's more than just don't be ashamed of who comes to watch rugby. It's actually, make it, be it's, English. It be proud of being English.
It is an interesting juxtaposition, isn't it, that Wales and their sporting bodies are now wishing to refer to the Welsh team as Cymru. The WRU have not said that. But they have
the football team
did it, and they were following.
Yeah, but they have sort of. I don't like that for many reasons. I just don't like that. Whereas England got rid of the name Saxons because it wasn't as inclusive enough. I mean, I don't know what to say to you. You're England. You know, it's England. There's nothing wrong with the Saxons. There's nothing wrong with hymns. There's nothing wrong with Elmgar. There's nothing wrong with Sweet Chariot. Nothing wrong with any of these things. So, yeah, I agree with you, actually. Mm. You'd be like banning Bread of Heaven from... exactly the same thing.
Newcastle are an exciting team. Just jumping back to the actual rugby. Matteo Carrera scored again.
Oh, yes, standard.
Which was a try finished by Carreras, but created by the pace of Radwan.
Yeah.
Outrageous pace. Yeah. And they've got... Newcastle have got some great players.
They've got a really good-looking backline now.
Yeah, they have. They've got lovely backline. They've got options in plenty of the positions. They've got pace, importantly. And lots of, like, the back three that started and will probably be their cemented back three for the season in Carreras, Radwan and Obatoyimbo. There's so much pace in that back line, as much as basically any team in the league, even the likes of Gloucester when they get their fastest team out. And they've got a good pack that are well-drilled and, importantly, a superb try-scoring hooker who, although he didn't score this week, but Guy Pepper did score this week.
Your boy Guy Pepper.
Yeah, do we know if our boy Guy Pepper is actually who I think he is?
He must be.
He must be. There's no other explanation
there
for
can't
it.
Be, yeah, yeah. I am right.
Yes.
Dave Walder, I think, is bedded in what he wants to do there. I think Newcastle are one of those teams that will really benefit from there only being 11 teams in the Premiership. That's four fewer games. And for them, that's massive.
That's a good point, actually.
But yeah, their squad will benefit because it's a thin squad. Their finances will not benefit.
Correct.
Because there's two fewer home games.
Yeah, correct.
This fixture, it's just outside the international window, but it's two teams who are virtually unaffected by the international window.
Yeah.
Just on the last game, do you know what we've not done, and we never do it, but we've been told that we should do it by listeners? We never start with the score.
Okay.
So, last game.
Just go to Ultimate Rugby and get the wrong one.
Yeah, yeah. Bath 13, 19, Harlequins 19. There you go.
Yes. And I don't know if you saw any of this, JB, from
I have seen
Dubai.
Some highlights.
Yeah, I saw highlights.
So I was excited because two players I've not seen enough of and I want to see a lot more of played. Can you guess who they are?
Two players playing that you haven't seen much of.
This year.
Cam Redpath?
No, for Harlequins.
Oh, for Harlequins.
There's only one player for
Bath. Oh, Beardy.
Yeah.
Oscar Beardo.
Beard. Oscar Beard.
I'll let you talk about Oscar Beard and Harlequins while I just take a little comfort break.
Oscar Beard. Finish his try, lovely finish on his try. Great feet.
And Craig's brother?
Craig's brother?
Yep, Craig's brother. Who is the other player? Brother of Craig?
I've no idea who Craig is.
David.
Oh, they both scored tries.
Yeah.
They both scored tries this week. So this was interesting. So 13-19, three tries to one. But Bath could have won this game.
And they could have.
Like, as in, genuinely, they could have won this game. And I actually think it was a bad referee decision that cost them the game at the end. Obviously, it didn't cost them the game because they had 79 preceding minutes to score. Yeah. But I think the final decision... So, for the last 5 minutes, they were camped on Harlequin's line. They score a converted try, wins the game for them. Jack Kennington gets a yellow card. Someone else, George Head, got a yellow card.
Is it Hooker?
So Quinns are down. Yeah, George Head's reserve hooker. Yeah. Came on for Jack Walker. So Quinns are down to 13 men. Bath, stick it in the corner. Line out. They've got a good line out. They've got a good driving maul. I think Tom... Did Tom I'm looking at the team now. Did Tom Dunn come off the bench?
No, Niall Annett would have.
Okay, yeah. But the final driving maul, Bath break off from the final driving maul, and there's a Quinns player who makes the tackle and then seals off over the ball. And he was given a penalty to Harlequins, even though there was no clear relief from the Quins defender. So I think Bath were hard done by. I think, obviously, they did have the preceding 79 minutes, as we've already said, but I don't think the game should have been stopped at that point. I think that should have been a penalty to Bath, which would have given them another shot either to the corner or to scrum it against 13-man Harlequins. So hard done by.
Bath are getting a lot of value out of their Worcester pickups,
like massively,
a tremendous amount of value.
Well, those are, I think we might have even listed them. The two most valuable Worcester players were, yeah,
so that's not really surprising,
Lawrence and Ted Hill. But yeah, it's not that surprising that they're good players. It has been a surprise at just how good they have been. Like, immediately they've made a difference to that Bath team, and they've looked almost the best player on the pitch every time they've played.
You start to see Fergus Lee Warner start pretty much every single. I don't know. Is it just because he's fit? Just because he's available? Is this the plan going forward? But he is playing almost every game. Valerie Mozel, whatever his name is.
Morozov.
Morozov is also, well, they're using him quite extensively. Yeah. Shows.
But those two are good. And Thokunasinghe made a lovely break down the right side. Went outside of Esterhazen and another administration move in Josh Bassett. Made a beautiful break down the right wing. Looked fantastic. Looked rapid.
So, what games have we got in Premiership for next week?
Well, there's one more game I'd like to talk about.
Yeah, go on. There's a few emails as well I'd like to get through.
Again?
Well, do you do an email now? And then I'll talk about the game I wanted.
What?
So, because there was no game this afternoon, I had a little bit of time, because I normally watch a rugby game on Sunday. So I watched the whole of Leinster v Ulster Sunday afternoon.
Your beloved Ulster.
Oh, God. What a game, actually. So,
were they full-blooded?
Ulster were close to full-blooded. Leinster changed a few players, but not that many. Leinster were probably 75% and Ulster were maybe 90%, 95%. So not bad, considering you just got out of Europe and just got out of international and you've got Europe next week. So 3-3, 20 minutes into the game, Healy goes to tackle Stewart, the hooker, who's playing really well, and clash of heads, both end up bloodied, but it's a red card from Healy. It was, follow the framework, it's a red card. You maybe could have argued that it wasn't, the acceleration came from Stewart rather than Healy, but he's upright, he was high force, ball carrier didn't dip. Red card after 20 minutes. Ulster then score 3 tries consecutively.
This is going brilliantly, Phil.
They go 22-3 up, only a couple of minutes left on the clock in the first half, and Leinster pull one back. I think it was a driving maul, but Ulster scored kind of 2 close-up, close-quarters tries through Herring, who'd just been on the pitch for 30 seconds, and Treadwell.
Was that 22-17?
Breakaway tried from McElroy. That makes it 22-10. Okay. So they were 22-3 up. Second half, Leinster score early in the second half. Actually, no, tell a lie. All the tries came slightly later on. Start of the second half was a bit of an arm wrestle, but Leinster were coming back after Ulster scoring 3 tries. Leinster start coming back into it. Ulster start tiring. Then 2 amazing steps inside from Gary Ringrose. 2 tries in quick succession from Ringrose. A try from Porter. Wow. A try from James Lowe.
Wow.
And Leinster have scored 36 unanswered points against Ulster, despite being down to 14 men. Now, it must be said, for a period of time, Ulster were down to 13 men because they had 2 accurate yellow cards. And Ulster got one back at the end. So Leinster just in the last 20 minutes or so, 25 minutes, just showed their class across the board. And by the end of it, for the final Leinster try, the low try, Ulster just looked out on their feet because they'd just they'd given everything and come up short against a team that had 14 men for most of the game.
And still the standard bearers.
They are. They're massively the standard bearers, and they will be. They'll be good in for Europe this year. They really will.
Like, losing semis.
Yeah, they might add another star.
I don't know. I always think that. I mean, the Pro 14 or whatever it's called nowadays, the Rabo Pro Direct 12. it has definitely improved. It is more competitive. Games like you're just talking about then will benefit Leinster. But they need to be doing this every single week because much like the England ladies team who came and stuck on their 31st game, if you do nothing but batter people for 30 games or whatever it is, then it's going to be hard when you finally do come up against someone who's able to hit you in the face.
That point, yeah. So I agree with the point if you play 30 bad games and then play one. But actually, I think the URC now is strong enough that you can blood additional players. You're always going to... You'll only go a few weeks without playing one of the big South African sides or Ulster or Munster or Glasgow and Edinburgh. So it's not... You actually, I think it's now probably not far off the sweet spot for Leinster. They can blood talent, they can rest boys when they need to rest them, and they get high-end physical confrontational matches like this.
Fair point, that.
And then they've got Europe.
By the way,
and
just
then,
on
then you go to Europe.
I loved that Joe Marler made the point of saying, oh, yeah, you're right, Europe next week. We're going to South Africa. Where's that? Oh, sorry. We're going to Natal Sharks. Where's that? South Africa.
Brilliant.
Yeah, good. Quite right. It's. I understand money and stuff. It's just farcical that you've got a European Cup and teams travelling to the Southern Hemisphere.
Joe Marler might not actually like it because he loves being at home with his family, but some of the other boys will be loving the chance to go to Durban.
Yeah, that's fair. Can't argue with that.
But there won't be many fans going out there. No. That's the shame. Whereas if they were playing a trip to La Rochelle or Lyon or Toulouse or Connor or Cork or Dublin or Belfast would be amazing.
I tell you what, there are some bloody good games this weekend in the Heineken Cup.
Well, we will get into that shortly. I'll just go through a couple of these emails. contacttedchasers@gmail.com. Did you manage to meet up in Dubai with some of the people that were emailing?
I did. I didn't manage to go for a bit because you've got to remember the place is absolutely packed. It is a zoo in there. Yeah, if you lose your friends and you don't have a phone like I didn't, it is difficult.
Oh dear.
Have you managed to find your phone, by the way, on your tracking app?
Not yet. I'll have a look later.
Okay. Well, I asked about local derbies last week.
So we were
interested in local derbies. And Alex Webb said Rochford, I'm not sure how you say that, versus Westcliff.
Ooh, classic.
National 2 South, 3 miles apart.
Nice. Mm.
That's a good level to have two teams so close together.
Yeah, it really is.
So I like that one. Ben Hall has emailed contacttedchasers@gmail.com. Hornets RFC versus Western Supermare RFC, both in the same town. Hell of a ding-dong. Hornets have been an offshoot of a disgruntled Western Supermare from players back in 1962. Since then, the rivalry has been fierce, especially in recent years as both were in National 3 for the last few seasons. Hornets being promoted to National 2 for this season has halted this until the club down the road catches up. Oh, the upstarts, the new team being exactly. Better. That must hurt. Our 2s, 3s and 4s are also in the same leagues. Cup and league matches between the two are our biggest events and revenue. Marquees and bands and many a pint drunk by the thousands. 2,000 to 3,000 regular attendance.
That's amazing.
For those events.
So
that's amazing.
God, Sales Sharks would kill for that.
I'm pretty sure something like 3,000, if not more, turned up for a derby between Kirby Lonsdale and Kendall not so long ago. And they had local radio coverage too.
Wow. So that might be one to go and check out if Hornets play Western Supermare. I love all this stuff. And I'm also, I just want to, where was that email I wanted to read out? Yeah, James Brickell. The title of this email is Amateur Clubs Run Well. and he said, I thought you lads would be interested in...
James Bracknell? Or Bricknell?
Brickell.
Brickell.
He said, I thought you lads would be interested in hearing about Chew Valley RFC, just south of Bristol. I know it. And widely said around here, they are the highest placed club in the UK that doesn't pay its players. Unless your listeners perhaps know of another. So there you go, there's another one.
So what league are they in, sorry?
I don't know, actually, if you could check. Chew Valley RFC. They've been promoted 3 times in 4 years and are now... Oh, sorry. Here we go. They've promoted 3 times in 4 years and are now second from top in Regional 1 Southwest.
So
is that level 6?
Yeah, I think Wharfdale don't pay their players, or they didn't used to.
I'm sure. So I've played against Wharfdale many times.
I've played against Wharfdale.
I'd be surprised if they didn't pay some of those boys.
That's what I've heard. There's a lot of rugby players that play in Wharfdale.
It might be... I remember hearing about... Birkenhead Park back in the day where they would pay expenses, but it was like expenses plus.
Yeah.
So it would be like £5 a mile plus then all your beer money plus then that kind of stuff.
Doesn't count.
I'd be surprised if Wharfdale...
Do you know you have to sign a declaration to the RFU that you're not paying players? So you sign your declaration, and once that declaration goes in, that means you're not entitled to grants and whatnot. So it's perfectly okay to pay players. But that declaration, those declarations though are not public, so there's no way to check.
Yeah,
and think it gets enforced.
So James says, part of the success seems to come simply from the fact they had a group of players come through the junior ranks right the way through from under eights. They took the decision that they will not pay any players apart from a player coach at prop. I'm sure they'll find their ceiling at some point and perhaps get demoted again. In the meantime, they are well supported, have great morals, with success at all levels. Great morale, sorry, with success at all levels. We're also very proud of the star scheme that was started at Chew Valley. He said, I won't bore you with the details, but there's a good video. And he said, hi to JB and Phil, who kindly peeled me off the ground in the North Dorset Sevens, playing against Egg Chasers in the Vets Tens.
Well, I was going to say, do you remember Brickers? And he has the world's coolest job. Would you care to guess what his job is?
World's coolest job, fighter pilot.
Cooler.
Cooler than a fighter pilot. Cooler.
Air commander for UK Space Force.
Not quite as cool as that.
That is a pretty cool job.
Yeah, not quite as cool as that one. He's BBC wildlife photographer and filmer.
Very cool.
There you go.
Top boy.
Very cool. Well, I've just had a look at that.
Yeah, we had a good few. He was the boy who had the head clash with Dave
Kenny. Yeah,
yeah. Oh, that was awful. Brutal. But he was back on the beers. Fair play to him.
is that the healthy message we should be sending to the?
Well, he took it easy.
He's politically incorrect.
I'm not saying that.
But he's a grown adult that made his own choice. No one was forcing
him. Oh, did he, Tim? Oh, how do you know, Tim? How do you make that decision for him, Tim?
So, sounds like Chew Valley have got a great thing going there. And I won't go too much into the star scheme, but I did have a look at the link. And it's basically Bristol is an area with, you know, a lot of, you know, Ellis Genge would be the first to say there's, you know, a lot of lads that could go down a different path. Same as us here in Manchester. And the star scheme tries to tap into that and use rugby as a force for good. And I was just looking at the examples, the success stories. And there's a guy called Daly who is now in the Bristol Bears Academy. And won a place at the SGS Academy to play rugby, as well as study, and that is he's been playing at Chew Valley since he was 11, when his mum thought he needed some kind of influence that rugby brings after his father was killed, and was also in prison for 5 years prior to that, so you know, it sounds like they've got some great things going on there, and that's a proper City Rugby Club doing special things. So I appreciate you letting us know about that.
Fantastic.
Yeah, really good. And I love stories like that. So contact headchasers at gmail.com.
Right, so...
Oh, sorry, one more local derby. I beg your pardon.
Oh, yeah, please.
Yeah, not many... I was at this club today. This comes from... Oh, I hope the name's right. The email address is Olive is the first name. So Olive, I'll just go with that. Not many physically closer derbies than Winnington Park and Northwich.
Oh, I've played both of these teams, and you're not wrong.
That'd be a spicy.
I know them. I know where they are. Cheshire.
They literally play on pitches next to each other.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Yeah. See, I've played at Northwich before, but I didn't really know anything about Winnington Park until I brought Raffy Quirks, Park under 15s there today.
Over the road. They do have a clubhouse.
Yeah, it's a nice club.
Northwich don't have a clubhouse.
Okay.
Winnington Park's a nice club. There's a lot of nice cars in the car park, a lot of lovely houses on the roads around.
It's a nice area around there.
Nice part of rural Cheshire. A lovely club. Their under-15s coach was great. Their team was a very good team. Massive. And here's a little tip, right? If you play against a team of, and we were just talking about Chew Valley, and the same for Broughton Park, if you play a team of, if you play a team with a lot of players that are from some mean streets, and our Broughton Park team have got some lads that, you know, they'll have seen some things.
Yeah.
What you don't want to do to those lads is, as they come out to warm up, jog past them and laugh and say, look how small these guys are. Because I did not need to do any motivation. I mean, this Winnington Park team were massive. They were huge. But yeah, we've got some tough lads. And that was it. I didn't need to do any team talk. I went, they heard it. They heard them laughing. They go, look, these lads are a bit small. And our team just went, right, that's it. Sleeves rolled up and they flew into them. They won.
But awesome.
They smashed them.
Good lads. Yeah. I like that.
So it's the size of the fight in the dog.
Yes.
And all that.
Bigger they are, the harder they fall.
All of that.
Not always true, though, is it? I found out.
Not always true.
Well, you don't always find out because you just let your man tackle.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, like what's his face?
Maurice Farsavalu,
which is your man.
Never again. Business decision, mate.
You're quite right that we got a big weekend of games coming up.
Yeah. So rather than go through every single fixture, how about we do this? Have a look at the fixtures. Pick three you like.
Well, so I actually think it's quite interesting to go through the fixtures because there's a lot of repetition. Because in the Champions Cup now, so there's two pools, but each team only plays two teams.
Mm.
So you're going to be seeing, you're either going to be having a good ding-dong or getting hammered.
Hiding.
Yeah. Mm. So I think it is interesting to go through them. So there's 12 teams per pool. So
yep.
24 teams in total.
Yeah.
You only play two teams from your pool, though, even though there are 12 in your pool. And you play the corresponding opposite ranking from the other competitions. So if you're the top ranked English team in your pool, you will play the lower ranked URC and top 14 teams in your pool.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Loosely.
Well, what day by day? So the Friday night it opens. I think London Irish v Montpellier. It could have been a better game to open.
I think.
I mean, the Brentford Stadium. We talked about it being 6,000. You'd love to. I mean, if that was in Montpellier, that'd be a great game to start the whole thing. But
yeah, it's a fair point. You want a big TV spectacle, yeah?
Yeah,
yeah.
But I mean, it could be great.
That is a bit of a shame, actually. But let's see how it goes. So that is a bit of a shame.
Yeah. It's a big, big one for Zach Mercer because he's not going to be able to play Six Nations. So this European campaign is his shot window for England.
Yes.
For the World Cup.
Yeah. Fair point.
But as for Saturday, that lunchtime game on Saturday is
jokes.
Monstrous.
Absolute jokes of a game, that.
The Lancaster Bowl.
Yes. How's that? That's been a final before, hasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
In about 2018.
Racing 92 versus Leinster in the Thunderdome.
Oh.
It's going to be so good.
That is going to be exciting.
That's brutal.
And as well as obviously Leinster and Racing both fighting over Stuart Lancaster, Christian Wade is playing for Racing 92.
Is he starting regularly?
He scored two tries against Clermont week or two ago. Now, I don't know how regularly he's starting. I don't know whether he'll be playing, but he was kind of famously not picked for Lancaster's England, despite, scoring six tries every time he played against Worcester.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Getting all sorts of stuff going on here.
No, it's all right, mate. Sakes. Yeah, that's... He's had a great story. He'd be a good interview, JB, wouldn't he, Christian Wade?
I'd love to interview Christian.
Yeah, he's got... What a great story.
Yeah, I do interview some more people soon. Oh, sorry, I'll get back on like a second.
Hopefully that's still running as it should be. We just had a little momentary technical issue. You all sorted, JB?
Good.
How's the waveform looking? Good enough?
I think we're all right. Fortunately, we've had enough of the podcast that even if this bit balls up,
exactly,
we can get away with it.
Yes.
But I think we're okay.
Okay. So, any predictions in that one? I feel it's hard to predict these.
Racing Leinster, yeah, Racing at home, but it's Leinster. Oh man, that is! I can't wait. For that one.
Be a hell of a game, that.
I'm not going to be able to watch most of it though, because I'm in Gloucester, so I'll be preparing.
Annoyingly, I'm going to be 30 minutes into a taster menu and wine flight at 2 PM
Where are you going?
I'm in London.
Nice.
Yeah, but you're in London. No one cares about rugby. You can avoid the result of that and watch it later.
I could. Yes. Maybe it's not the best thing to watch after a wine flight. But
correct.
Yeah, I'll watch it anyway.
Gloucester Bordeaux will be interesting. Is Tom Willis playing for Bordeaux?
No. Oh, Tom Willis is playing for... Yeah, he might be for Bordeaux. Yeah, sorry, yeah. I was getting confused with his brother, Jack.
Yeah.
Tom Willis is... Let's see if I can find it now.
What else we got? Clermont Stormers, Quinn's Sharks...
Bordeaux, Bulls, it is Bordeaux. Leon,
La Rochelle, Northampton. So, I mean, really, the Saturday is all about Racing Leinster. And the rest, I mean, the other games are good, but that is just box office. Absolute box office.
Yeah. I think Quinn Sharks will be a good game as well. Sorry.
No, it's quite all right.
My phone is showing up at two separate hotels. And I wasn't either of these hotels.
So it's like a worm. It's been cut in half.
Yeah. Exciting. I would love to know who's had a great time with my phone. Who would do this?
Great question.
Half one at night at one hotel, then nips over the road to the other hotel.
Well, they were just drinking, and then they're gonna,
who knows?
I mean, it's interesting that they're not even worried about turning it off or chipping it, maybe. I remember when I had my I was working at a Bristol game and I just nipped into the little Tesco across the road from the hotel I was staying in just to grab a pint of milk to have a cup of tea. And someone nicked it just while I was at the checkpoint. But within 5 minutes, it had been...
How annoying.
It was off and then resurfaced.
Never comes on again.
So it just happened so quick.
Mm.
Oh, well. Yeah. I'm an idiot.
Right, so where were we?
I don't know, talking about games or something.
Clermont Stormers will be interesting to see. Just you get a level on where the top 14 and the IRC and where the Premiership and top 14 and Premiership and IRC are at with, like you say, Sharks, Quins.
IRC, is this what we're calling it now?
Ultimate Rugby Championship,
yeah. URC.
IRC. Clermont are not the team that they once were.
No, they're not.
They're 10th in the top 14 and they've still got a bit of talent there, but... They're not going to be competing. I don't think, I could be wrong, but they're not going to be competing for Europe and top 14s for a few years unless things dramatically change.
It's those two Irish provinces are the big games. The three, actually, because Sale are actually having a good season. But Racing v Leinster on the Saturday. Sunday, Munster v Toulouse.
Nice.
And also before it's Sale v Ulster. That mean if you're in London, you're not going to be going to see your beloved Ulster coming to town?
Unfortunately not.
Oh, you could have taken your Pienaar jersey.
I could have. And the annoying thing is, so there's a train strike on the Sunday. So
you don't want to get a train from London to Manchester on a Sunday anyway, because it's 3.5 hours. It's ridiculous. It's 2022 and we're in the UK.
Avanti West Coast.
I know.
They're a joke.
Me and you spend quite a lot of time on Avanti West Coast, Tim, unfortunately.
They're dreadful.
It is an absolute disgrace. And the prices are still...
I know.
I could tolerate it. So... Do you know how I'm getting back? I looked at flying, but because I was too late looking at flying, my only options were to go via either Brussels or Amsterdam. And I'm not doing either of those things. I'm not driving.
Get the National Express.
I'm on the National Express.
Really?
It is 5 hours it's going to take. Thank you, Avanti West Coast.
They are dreadful.
Oh, they're so bad. So bad.
I know. Well, you wrap up this chat about the games then, and that's how we're going to play ourselves out. A song for Phil.
What, with the Avanti Express?
Yeah, hold on. You remember this?
Yeah, I quite like this tune.
Yeah, it's a great song.
Yeah.
Anyway, carry on. Talk about the rugby.
Right, I'm just going to tell you the winners. Right.
Go on then.
And I'm looking at this in Pool 1 and Pool 2. So in Pool 1, your winners are Racing 92, Harlequins, Bordeaux, Bulls.
Shush.
Exeter.
It was good tune, this.
Carry on.
Excellent. Saracens, they're your winners in pool A. And in Pool B, your winners are Montpellier, Clermont, La Rochelle, Ulster, come on Ulster, Toulouse, and Leicester Tigers.
Love it. Right, have we got time for a quick podcast on our Patreon channel to dig into JB on his Dubai escapades?
Oh, yes, please. I want all of the gossip.
JB's looking nervous.
Looking at where my phone is.
All right, well, we'll track the phone down. And thank you for listening. Hit subscribe. Tell your mates. Let the boys play. See you on the next one.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.